a very confident front runner. I've caddied for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it!
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course, that's a particularly stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course, we want to play at the weekend.
Hello, you're welcome along to Golf Weekly. A winning week for Padraig Harrington is a good week in our book. We'll bring you the thoughts of the man himself after we put him right last week. Plus, Tiger Woods has been speaking with Charlie Rose. We'll bring you some of that. And Rory McIlroy is trying out some new equipment. Nathan Murphy, hello.
How are you?
Dave McIntyre is here.
Hey, Joe.
Fionn Davenport in Manchester at Old Trafford last night, so not with
his girlfriend.
With his girlfriend, Dave.
Brought to Old Trafford by his girlfriend.
Have you a girlfriend?
I used to.
She's now his wife. So, tweets at Golf Weekly NT. Before we get to Padraig Harrington, which we will, I mean, it's amazing, really. Jack Mortlock, watching PH win the Portugal Open was like watching Liverpool win the English Premier League. The whole time you were just waiting for the crash. I mean, it never happened. Some heroic up and downs from Harrington. Patrick Flynn, the stare Harrington gave Ronan Flood after the 7-iron and 18, thought he was going to hit him with it. Bad yardage call. I'm not sure if it was bad yardage call.
No.
It's a bit of a flyer.
In fact, it was almost pin high in terms of where he landed it.
Yeah.
I think it was just a look of bemusement. But he did say when he was chatting to us on Off the Ball that it was a really bad lie, and that only exacerbates the way in which you play 18 in Villamora, because you just want to go nowhere near the water. You're feeding right anyway. And then off that, did he get a mud ball as well? Was there some mud on the ball? He didn't mention it, but there was a little something you could see in the TV pictures, and that just sent it further right. Yeah, and you know you've got the grandstand anyway to help you out. It's going to hit somebody or something.
I mean, when you've got the grandstand, stay right.
The look was a look of exasperation of, I'm here playing the 18, about to win the first tournament in 8 years, and this has bloody happened.
You need to boost your mic, pal.
Sorry about that.
That's better. Still not quite on mic for some reason.
Well, maybe turn my mic up.
You're at plus 10.
Oh.
Francis Fallon says, I'm a weekly listener to the pod. I decided it's about time to start following Fionn on Twitter. I took one look at his profile pic and I'll never be able to listen to the pod the same ever again.
Is that in a positive way?
We don't know.
What is his profile pic at the moment?
I don't know. It's just Fionn smiling. A very well-preserved man in his 40s.
Yeah, 40s, sorry. Is he still in his 40s?
Yeah. Yeah, late 40s. But still hanging on.
Pristine he is.
He looks incredibly good.
Yeah, he does. He does.
So, I mean, I presume that listener Tanned. Is impressed.
You know, he's a well-travelled man.
Mm. Owen Hutchinson. Ah, lads, where's the Padraig Harrington celebratory pod? He tweeted us yesterday. Give us a break. This is a Thursday thing. Also, get him on every week if it has that effect on his golf. I know. Daniel points out, Joe, the golf whisperer can make you win tournaments or give you the driving whips. Enjoy your podcast. Oh, enjoying your podcast in Oslo. In brackets, Europe. It's helpful. Wouldn't like to have to name the country just now.
I'm sure if you plugged Oslo into the United States Google Maps, there's probably about 15 of them somewhere. Like there's about 4 or 5 Dublins and a couple That's of Manchesters.
True. Dublin,
maybe
Ohio.
Maybe he's aware of an Oslo somewhere in the US.
Well, he's just been a smart ass because Joel's geography ain't great.
Daniel's in Oslo, Europe. Sean Clancy, rounds of 77 and 79 in recent weeks declared by Joe Malloy following lessons. Details needed at Golf Weekly NT.
That's stalkerish.
He hears everything, Sean. It was brought up on Off the Ball last night. Not by me.
Aha, yeah, not by you.
Not by me. Gilroy right at the top brought it up. So I didn't bring it up. Yeah,
you tell me about the guy who's been giving you your lessons. When I do pick up a club round about mid-May next year,
yeah,
I'll pay him a visit.
Noel Fox Jr.
He's good, Dave, but Jim Furyk's swing.
Whoa!
I'm not sure there's anything. Anything that can be
when
done
Noel
with that.
Sees a thing of beauty, he'll know well.
Does Noel leave Noel work well for Harrington?
I have a feeling
he was there. He was in Portugal.
Yeah,
I saw him tweeting that he was in Portugal.
I'm just wondering lately. I think they may have had some chats.
Right
now, but Padraig did say he'd been working with Cowan, Pete Cowan,
on the Monday.
Yeah, so he's still certainly working with Pete Cowan. Maybe he's having some chats with Noel. I honestly don't know. I don't know, and I wouldn't ask Noel because
maybe Noel was just on his holidays.
I know he was certainly over there with him, but I don't know if they're like working together.
Maybe they're just mates.
I mean, Harrington heard what he did for my game and said,
"Yeah, the whole world has heard what he's done for your game."
Hey, look, I'm not going to talk about my game because it's incredibly boring. Suffice to say, broken 80 twice in the last.
If you were
four
breaking 80, You'd be bragging about it.
It's just, lads, it's unbelievable. I never thought I would. Never thought I'd ever break 80. Just thought I was a weekend warrior destined to maybe 85, 86. So, unbelievable.
Even I shot 86 before, Joe. Back in the day when
you
I was playing a lot of golf, shot 86.
Yeah.
Now I'm trying to shoot 86 on the front nine.
It's amazing. I'm not going to jinx it just yet. Conor Murphy, hands were over the eyes when Harrington played the final hole of his round. Really hope he gets to compete at the Masters. Absolutely. Sean Sheehan, I was in touch. He said, I started listening to Golf Weekly NT recently. Very enjoyable golf podcast. And I wrote back only recently. And he said, yeah, just last week. But I went back and listened to six in a row.
Good
so,
man.
I'm forgiven. And then somebody else tweeted him to say, it is a great podcast, to be fair, when the three lads get their schedules matching. Busy men. Our favourite tweet of the week said, listening to the pod this morning, driving to work in the dark after 2 weeks off, it brightened my morning. It's a nice tweet to get. The reason it's our favourite tweet is this guy's Twitter name, which is the greatest Twitter name, I think, in the history of Golf Weekly.
Don't tell me. Truck Eisenhower has tweeted us.
No. Pro V1 Kenobi.
That is good.
That's good.
That is very good.
Pro V1 Kenobi, you're a friend of the pod. We love you. That is phenomenal work. If anyone can beat Pro V1 Kenobi, good luck to them. David Horhan's bemoaning the fact that the golf season's already over in Chicago. Winter is coming, he says. Paul Hennessy, listening to the pod, crossing from Cambodia to Vietnam. Nice picture from Paul Hennessy. Safe travels, sir. And Mark says, any truth in the rumours, you're responsible for Portugal's win in Portugal. Have the pros been queuing up to be on the pod? No, they haven't. So, there are tweets for the week. We're talking Padraig Harrington next. So, Padraig Harrington, never write the man off. Literally, on the interview we played on the podcast last week, and I know you updated the information, Nathan, on the pod last week, but at the time he was saying, before he went to Portugal, he'd mysteriously lost a ton of length with his driver, with his irons. We signed off that phone call thinking, right, not holding out much hope for Padraig in Portugal. And therein is the lesson. Literally never write this man off, because miraculous things happen.
Miraculous things happen to somebody like Harrington with the willpower and the talent of Harrington, but also little things happen that even he can't predict. So you're talking to him on Sunday. He's going to meet Pete Cowan. He's worried. He doesn't have a clue what's going to happen. Mm. But somehow he meets up with Pete Cowan. They spend an hour together on the range, and the distance is fine. And all the issues he's had for the previous 3 weeks just aren't there. He's handed a brand new set of clubs, which aren't out in the market. You know, Harrington's first up. He's like, oh, these are nice. I'll give these a go.
All of those make me think, though, it's unlikely you'll be able to put that into tournament-winning play initially. And yet, he did. And yanked at his arse all week.
Yeah.
That was the real takeaway. I was thinking only Padraig Harrington could kind of yank at his arse for 4 days and we'd love him for it all the more. It was something to do with his posture.
His posture, yeah.
He says it's something he's been trying to fix since 1996.
Yeah. His hips don't work well in a golf swing, apparently.
It's a very poor Harrington type win in that everything seemed to be going against him, but it was an un-Harrington type win in that he had to shoot 23 under to win it.
The lowest score on European Tour all year.
If you had said to him, or anybody, that your next tournament win will see you go 23 under, you would have laughed at him, because he's had to grind his way to the vast majority of his wins. But I remember last year, after he talked about winning the Honda Classic, and that had brought an end to, was it 2008?
Yeah.
Since his previous win on the PGA Tour. And he had talked about the fact that, look, when I'm in contention, I generally win. And when is the last time Padraig Harrington went down the stretch on a Sunday and didn't win? He gets it done. It's just that he's in contention so seldom.
I'm accepting that to a point. St. Andrews 2015, he was very much in contention on the Sunday.
Yeah, he had a Masters quite recently.
Yeah. It's one of the Harrington lies that has a bit of truth in it, but he just tells himself and us a billion times, and his competitors, which is a crucial thing, when I'm in contention on a Sunday, I always get it done. That's not true. But it's just one of these things that Harrington says all the time, and it almost takes on this. Yeah.
The Open you're talking about, he was in contention just before he made the turn, if memory serves me correctly, and then he had a bad two or three holes, and he was suddenly gone.
He lost a hole in a bush.
I'm talking, he gets into the real business end of the tournament, last four, five, six holes. Now, in saying that, when he won the Honda Classic, he dumped it in water on 17, and he had to hole a 12-footer on 18 to force a playoff, so it wasn't like he cruised to that victory.
It's not like, oh, I get into flawless golf mode.
Yeah. And it's also not necessarily a positive thing. that when I get into contention over those last four or five holes, nobody's going to beat me. Now, I haven't done it in 8 years.
Yeah.
But is he giving himself a free pass?
What about some of the up and downs? The one on 18 was magic. Absolutely magic.
Yeah.
The whole tournament on the line. His hole out from the bunker at 11.
He said, well, I mean, we'll play a clip of him. He was speaking to the lads on Monday. He said that's when he knew the tournament had swung in his favour.
Yeah.
When he holds out from a bunker to make a birdie, that's like, that's such a bonus.
Well, that was the hardest shot he had all week, he said.
Really?
Yeah.
And then he had an up and down from a par 3 as well on the 16th.
Yeah, it was definitely in the last four holes anyway.
And an up and down on 17. He had three up and downs in his last four holes, which were not easy. Although he felt that he always had loads of green to work with, and he likes that type of grass. He feels comfortable in that type of grass. But it's still ballsy stuff on a Sunday to do that.
His scrambling for the week, 96%.
Off the charts.
So he said normal week is 66%, and a week that gets him into contention is around 80%. Like, 96%. I saw somewhere...
You can't beat someone doing that.
That he hit 51 greens in regulation.
When?
Over last week.
Out of the 72.
Out of the 72.
And then had 96%.
Since scrambling.
Yeah. How is he not 40 under par? Yeah. You can't beat him.
Yeah.
Can he do it more often is the question.
No. Okay. He can't and he won't.
Yeah.
But... That's, as he said, I know was it the Jocondo Open that he won in 2015? Because he talks to you as being a winner now 3 years in a row.
Yeah.
It was certainly in Indonesia or Malaysia. It was in the Far East. But he has won an event 3 years in a row. Because that was the first time he'd won anywhere in the world since he won the PGA Championship. Mm. So he's doing far more than an awful lot of the golfers out there. He's back inside the top 100.
It's quite something that Harrington has won on the PGA Tour and European Tour in the last 2 years. The way we talk about him, it's like this crazy old man who is deluding himself.
Yeah.
And yet he's won on the European Tour and the PGA Tour in his last 2 years. Has Shane Lowry done that?
That's what I was just going to say.
Well, he hasn't won this year. Yeah. No. He won the Bridgestone. Portuguese Open 3 years ago.
Yeah, and he won the... And he
2012.
He won the Bridgestone last year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's... Obviously, that was a WGC, which is fair enough.
Sure.
But in terms of... wins over the last 3 years, Harrington's ahead of him.
It was amazing stuff. So he joined the lads on Off the Ball on Monday night, and here's what this was 24 hours on from the win on Sunday. Here's some of what he was saying.
I suppose I could explain it like this. My friend texted me during the week, or probably Saturday, and he says, I play golf like I'm like Rocky Bilbao plays golf. So there's always a bit of the he's down and out and he's going to come back type thing. So I think in terms of people watching, there's always a bit of excitement about the couple of things strange, you know, obviously people said to me I had those eyes and I looked like I was in the zone, but I was probably the most relaxed I've ever been in and around the tournament in between shots compared to any of my wins in my career.
Really?
So I was in a very, very, very good place. There wasn't, you know, on 18, from the outside it did look like a bit of drama, but to be honest, with a one-shot lead, that's the only way you can play the hole is down the right. I didn't get a great lie. And the only place to hit it from there is down the right again. And thankfully, my game is built on the ability to get up and down around the green. So it wasn't the most stressful position for me to be where I was. I've got to say, the putt I hold, it was about 3.5 feet, and it was downhill, very fast putt outside the hole. And at that stage of the day, the greens were a bit bumpy. So, you know, tiddling it down the hill was no fun. Mm. But the great thing is I knew it wasn't going to be any fun. I knew I was going to be nervous. So once you're prepared for that sort of stuff, it doesn't catch you out.
Paul, we had you on the show the week you were talking to Joe. You were saying how good you felt your game was at the moment. You were loving your game, loving your chipping, loving everything about it. So did that kind of just take over then going into this weekend then?
All through the summer, my game physically has been, you know, swinging the golf club with a lot of control. Short games turned around, putting's been good. And I've been telling anybody who listens that there's going to be a bumper week where it all comes together in the 1 week and I get the break. Portugal was that week. The golf course suited me. The type of grasses around the greens made it very easy for me to get up and down. Loved everything about it. But I also got my attitude right. You know, when your game starts to get in shape, you obviously... You're not as worried about, you know, what you're doing on the range or swing, so you start focusing on other areas. I read at the start, or during the week, I was reading a book by Dave Allred, who I work with, The Pressure Principle. And it just struck me, and I do work with Dave, but how poor my self-talk, my language to myself had been in and around the golf. And, you know, I focused on that during the week, and it was definitely the added bit of gel that brought everything together. And So I've been saying this, interestingly, my physical posture changed as I walked around the golf course because of what I was saying to myself compared to other days. I was getting very disappointed with myself when I'd hit a bad shot or an average shot. And, you know, I'd be saying, oh, I can't believe you did that, Patrick. I can't believe, you know, you're better than that. And that sort of stuff isn't helpful. So I was very, very good to myself. I was very nice to myself last week. And I love the fact that you could actually see it physically, even though it was completely mental. A very holistic point, I'm very good at, you know, trying to be good outside, in and around what I say about the golf. But physically, I was getting, or mentally, I was, when I actually hit a shot on the golf course, there was a moment of sheer disappointment. That was, I could say that, you know, and you just, oh, I can't believe you hit that shot. And like, in the end of the day, I hit it plenty of times. You'd think I'd believe it at this stage. So, you know, I just was catching myself on what I was saying and concentrating on what I was saying. Sports people are so, we're so into when one thing happens, we make it like it happens like that all the time, which is, you know, I could be the worst putter in the world and hitting that 3.5 footer on the last. And I could say, well, I never hold these putts right to left downhill. But the reality is, I might find them hard, but I hold them plenty of time. But we tend to, you know, we always tend to see the downside. So I was much better in that sense. I was watching it, really watching myself talk, and it definitely made me a lot more comfortable in what I was doing. And as I said, I really liked the fact that if you watched it, my posture was so much better. I was walking around the place like I owned it. You know, I was played golf last week very much just being myself, just doing my thing, and I outperformed myself last week, and that's what happens in golf. If you played your own game every week, some weeks you wouldn't get the breaks and you'd miss the cut. Other weeks you'd do nicely, and then some weeks like Portugal, where it did suit me, but then I got the breaks. I got all the breaks last week, all the right breaks, and you know, very rarely did I. When I missed the green, I had a good lie, you know, and that you don't necessarily, that doesn't happen every weekend. Sometimes you don't pick up on it, but if you're patient and you wait for it, you'll have weeks where everything goes and you'll have weeks where things don't go. But the main thing is to keep being yourself and to let it happen rather than trying to play up to some, which we all get caught, trying to play up to some standard that's, you know, some expectation that's in your head that's probably actually unrealistic. And I definitely was disappointed with my performances, disappointed with myself with shots I was hitting the golf course and getting upset about it, whereas last week I was much better prepared on the golf course to take whatever came my way.
Patrick, will you talk to us a little bit as well? I've noticed over the last few weeks your new routine, your new pre-shot routine, it's essentially your...
I'm hitching up my yes.
That's better better than I was going to describe it, Jack. Go ahead, Jack.
So that's right. You're pulling my backside up. Okay.
Yeah, that's it, Jack.
I have, since 2005, I go out to a place in the States, TPI, Titleist Performance Institute, which do a lot of biomechanical work. And from the very first time I went, they said, right, your hips don't function right in the golf swing. I've spent 11 years and won the three majors in that time, highly frustrated that I can't figure out how to do it. And in Italy, because I was frustrated about this speed, I obviously went back to it and was, you know, wanting to. And my golf coach suggested I do that drill, which gets my hips in a better position. It gets them more tilted over so that they rotate more rather than sway now. It hasn't made a blind bit of difference to my physical game or speed, but it's technically more correct.
Right.
It's that, probably technically. Yeah, it's technically better. It works better 3D, and maybe down the road it will make a difference. But certainly now I can do it. I'm delighted. It's one of those things that you're always worried that is causing a problem. But maybe it is better. But in the end, I don't see a huge difference. But it's nice to know that there's nothing wrong with it now. And it still takes me a little bit to get into it. So hopefully, you know, maybe by the start of next year, I won't actually physically have to be pulling my belt buckle up before I hit the shot.
Yeah, it's good good visual for the rest of us.
Yeah. Okay. You know what? You do understand here, guys. If I thought I'd get the job done and I have to play naked, I would. Okay, it would make no if I thought I'd hit it 20 yards further, I would do it.
Well, listen,
okay,
if the European Tour are looking for bigger TV audiences, Patrick, I would suggest that's something you could pitch them.
Well, actually, Henrik Stenson, I don't know if you ever remember, he took his clothes off down to his boxer shorts to hit a shot in Doral a few years ago. And when it comes to golfers, Henrik's body is he's an Adonis, okay?
Do you think he was desperate to get the clothes off and then take the shot?
Well, I'll put it like this. We have physio with the same physio, so I do have to clear that this is why I do have seen him in his boxer shorts regularly. I know I'm a bloke. He has a body that he's an Adonis. The amount of grief he got about it on whatever, Twitter, online, about his lack too much body fat, let's say, or his lack of shape, and he's as good as they get. So the one thing I know you will never see me with my clothes off, okay? That is it. I ain't, no matter how wet or dirty and how much white clothes I'm wearing on the golf course, I will never take my shirt off. Unless, I look a hell of a lot better with the shirt off.
Unless Dave Allred suggests it might be the way to go.
If it was 20 yards, yeah, that would be a problem for me, all right. Yeah.
You've been very good with your time. Congrats again, and thanks many for speaking to us.
Well done, thank you.
No problem. You're welcome, guys.
There we go, Padraig Harrington on Monday, as ever, whenever he's on. Much love. People love listening to him. Just incredible decency, dignity, relentless quest for perfection. Doesn't care if he looks silly pulling his arse trouser.
No.
Just doesn't care.
We'll go around naked if
yeah,
as it meant he won the tournament.
A Harrington victory does a lot for the morale of the nation.
I know.
He is the most loved sports person in the country.
And I think our greatest.
Without question, our greatest ever sports person.
Because I was at the golf club on Saturday, and it's amazing. In the golf club even, and I'm sure the situation is replicated all over the country, people who might usually say, oh, I've got to shoot off, you know, it's hard enough to get out from golf as it is. Harrington's on the TV on the Saturday, and sure, everyone sits down, and everyone's chatting, and you think no one's watching it, and yet, anytime he's on screen and a shot goes by or goes in, everyone's like, oh, hey. There's like this sense where people love going up to each other and going, do you see Padraig's going well? It's like this thing which happens all around the country. Padraig's going well, are like the three magical words that you want.
People feel an ownership of him because he's always been so open. And I think you touched on it at the start. He's been very open, but he's been getting a message across. So we think we really know Harrington.
Yeah.
We know every little thing about him. But he wants us to know certain things.
Yeah.
And he wants us to believe certain things of him.
Yeah.
Like, it suits him as well that everybody thinks he works harder than anybody else.
Sure.
That all the other competitors think. And also suits him to think, for them to think he's crazy.
Yeah. And for them to think he loves this back nine Sunday stuff. He's as nervous as them. He's telling them as much as himself, I love this. So when they look over at him and think, oh God, this mad bastard's loving this and I'm nervous. Because he even said in that piece there with the lads, you know, how he knew he would be nervous over the putt on 18. And so it was just a case of preparing himself. When I stand over the ball, I'm going to be nervous. Like, he's just so good at that.
There's a couple of things that strike me. Eight. It has to be marked that it's 20 years on from his win at the Italian Open. That is unbelievable. How many golfers can win routinely over a 20-year period? Now, obviously, he had better patches than somewhere and others, but
still very
to
few.
Do it over 20 years is incredible. Like, we look at Mickelson having played in the Ryder Cup in 95 and is still playing Ryder Cup is spectacular.
Mm.
He has thrown six majors in there, but Harrington's achievement is incredible.
Yeah.
And the other one is that eventually, on a certain stage over a back nine in a tournament where he's winning, the three major thing kicks in terms of his opponents.
Yeah.
They do realise, well, this guy's won three majors. He's going for his 15th win on the European Tour.
Yeah.
That has to count, despite the fact that he's in contention so seldom.
Mm.
I'd say Andy Sullivan knew what he was up against. He couldn't get those birdies in over the last three or four holes. I don't know if it had anything to do with it, but is it just a coincidence that you're up against a former world number three and three-time major champion?
Well, it's like Tiger has said, you know, anything I win from here on in is gravy. Harrington's in that territory as well.
Oh, yeah, he's bonus
so
territory.
You are more nervous than him, unless it's at a major. If it's a Portuguese Open, you are more nervous than him because this does not change his career.
No.
This does not define him. He's just going for it for the sake of it. He's not trembling going, I need this for my card or I need this for some career-defining reasons. It's another brilliant asset to
have. Does it change your perception of what potential there is for him over the next year or two?
No.
Like, suddenly are you thinking, you know, next Ryder Cup team, he said he doesn't want to be the captain because he thinks he can play his way into the team. Can he contend in a major?
There is nothing to suggest. So when we're doing the research ahead of the interview for last week, I'm looking at his results. His only top 10 in the entire year had been at the Tournament of Champions, which he got into from winning yeah, the Honda.
Yeah.
And that's a reduced field. It's only 30 players in that. Mm. He came top 10 there. I think he'd won other top 20 all season.
Yeah.
So this is totally out of the blue. To get in the Ryder Cup, like, look what Shane Lowry did. And he couldn't even get on the Ryder Cup side. You need an incredible level of consistency.
Yeah.
You would think at some stage between now and the age of 60, he's going to be in contention for an Open.
That's what I was going to say. The one thing it does, when you're talking about his prospects, it hasn't changed my sense that he'll be in any way a consistent top 10 guy now, because it's not a big enough sample size. But it does, again, copper fasten this weird sense that he could strike over 4 days at a major. And
he has 14 more Open Championships to play.
Yeah, it will make no sense. It'll be mad. He'll just do crazy stuff for 4 days. And like you said a couple of weeks ago, Nathan, and it's stuck in my head since, Harrington or Mickelson, their lasting legacy could actually be oldest major winner in history. And increasingly I'm thinking, you see what he did in Portugal, and I now think, yeah, I can see this mad, mad, crazy genius doing it for 4 days in Troon or something, and it'll be the greatest 2019 ever.
I asked Harrington that last year about, with all the modern advancements and the fitness of golfers, that he must feel more confident, even though he was 45 at that stage, that, you know, you can play good golf well into your 50s and you can still win. But he was, but the younger guys coming through are far, far better than ever, and they've all the benefits that we never had. So while we'll stay going for longer, the younger guys are always going to be so much better. But I still think,
look,
there's something in him, and there's something in Mickelson. There's no way Mickelson isn't winning PGA tournaments into his 50s.
Yeah. 96% scrambling. If he does that at some Open, then everybody's in trouble.
Yeah, he's changed the schedule.
Oh, yeah.
As is always the case with Harrington. Like, this is, I would have thought, is a very easy decision, but Harrington's, well, I've delved deep into the figures and I've worked it out that the best thing for me to do is go and play in the Turkish Airlines Open and the Race to Dubai finale.
And he's back in the top 100 now.
He's back in the top 100. So the reason why it was an issue was that on the PGA Tour, he's now going to miss what, I suppose, we have to put him in that category of players in America, almost journeyman-esque. The guys who are getting into all these tournaments at the start of the year, where you can win one of them, it's easier to win them, and you can make a lot of money, which means you have a better chance of getting into the FedEx Cup, better chance of keeping your card.
Yeah.
You don't have to use any of your exemptions. But the obvious thing is to go to Turkey, even though there's a lot of speculation that the Turkish Airlines Open isn't going to go ahead, that it's going to be cancelled. Because there's been terrorist attacks in recent weeks.
Mm.
And obviously Tiger isn't going either way for other reasons. But yeah, they're due to confirm one way or another in the next couple of days. But Harrington, he's what, 43rd, I think, in the Race to Dubai, in around there. So he's definitely going to get in to the Race to Dubai finale.
I thought you were going to say it's cancelled because Tiger cancelled.
So he had to change his schedule by virtue of the fact that he's suddenly qualifying.
Yeah.
So you win that.
So much money. DP Tour Championship.
Ranking points.
On the exemptions... he obviously would have lost his card at the PGA Tour card this year, wouldn't he, had he not won at the Honda Classic.
Yeah. Mm.
So that's 1 year taken off your 3 years. If you comfortably retain your card, are those 3 years then kept in the bank?
Not sure. Oh, no, they're not.
So you lose a year regardless of where you finish in the FedEx Cup standings.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. No, that exemption has a date on it as opposed to a number of years.
I was wondering, was there a cap of 5 years? Obviously, if you're Mickelson and you are still retaining your playing privileges at the age of 60, it doesn't then kick in for the next 3 years if you no longer can manage to finish in the top 125. But, that's what he said last year. As soon as he won the Honda Classic, it allows me to plan my schedule now because I know there's no pressure on me to retain any playing privileges.
Well, it was amazing stuff. We mentioned Tiger Woods there. Interesting stuff from Tiger Woods this week. We're talking about him next. So, Tiger Woods was on Charlie Rose on Bloomberg during the week. I recorded this. I was very excited about this. You guys haven't seen this yet?
No.
No. Okay. He spent a lot of time with Charlie Rose.
Yeah, it was long.
So he did the interview, and then they were doing a big corporate gig together where they were also on stage for quite a while.
The interview was good. I was disappointed in Charlie Rose, supposedly world's greatest interviewer. He just kept going over. He must have laboured the point that Tiger hates being out injured, I would say 10 times. Like, there was wasted time in this interview, believe it or not. But he had so long with him that there was still great stuff in it. So I've picked out my three. These are the bits that you want to kind of hear. There's other good stuff about his father.
This is like clickbait. Nice. It's like,
this is sort of
like, you have to hear from Tiger and Charlie.
Three lessons learned from Charlie Rose and Tiger Woods. So it's the usual Charlie Rose setting. all black behind them. Charlie, very serious. Guests, as they always do in Charlie Rose, initially start off trying to sound smarter than they are and tangle themselves up. But eventually Tiger settles down. So, I mean, the most important thing, I guess, Charlie wants to ask him about, firstly, is where's his game at? So Tiger obviously has pulled out of the Safeway. So talk to us about your game, Tiger, and what's been going on.
It's a hard realization knowing that, you know, I'm not scoring like I should be. My feel for hitting, you know, 150-yard 7-irons and taking stuff off of it, or jumping on a 9-iron and hitting the correct distance, shaping shots, that all that stuff, I kind of lost that, the feel of that. And trust me, as a competitor, I was ready to go. I wanted to compete. But in my heart of hearts, I knew that I couldn't go out there and shoot 63s and 64s. And trust me, as a competitor, it doesn't feel very good.
So as the greatest iron player in the history of the game, many say, the greatest iron player in the history of the game, to take a 7-iron or to take a wedge and not be able to do what you know you have done before, mm-hmm. what you have felt before, mm-hmm. what does it feel like?
It was more of the feel of hitting those shots because I haven't done it enough. And I was in a groove playing at home. I took the time off with the Ryder Cup, and trying to come back after that, I just didn't quite have the same feel. And I thought I would pick it up right away. And I was ready to compete. I was ready to go. And, man, it's tough knowing that, you know, I see a shot and I say, okay, I can kind of feel it, but it's not quite there yet. If it's not quite there yet, hey, you've waited over a year to get back to this point. Let's be smart about it and, you know, not rush it. And that's from my brain saying that to me, but my heart is saying, Tiger, let's play. No, let's go. Come on, let's get back into it.
Have you come back before when you think now, looking back, it was too early?
Oh, God, I've done it so many times. Yeah. I've done it so many times, either through surgeries or through injuries. I've played through them. I've come back early. I've damaged the body to compete at a high level so many times. And this time I took a lot of time off to get it right. And there's no sense in hurrying and getting it, you know, injuring me anymore or shaping shots and getting the feel for it. I want to do it all right at the same time, have it all come together. And at Safeway, I thought I was ready for it, and I wasn't. And I said, okay, just take a step back. You waited this long. There's no sense in the urgency of getting back out there and doing it again. Make sure your stuff is ready. And when your stuff is ready, let's go.
So that's where he's at in this game? If you believe all that, it makes perfect sense that he's slowly coming back. At one point, Rose said to him, how's your driver? And he said, driver's good. How's your irons? Irons are good. Can you putt? And he said, yeah, I can still putt. Never asked him about the chipping. I hung in the air for me. I was like, ask him about the chipping.
Yeah.
Ronald Chambly says he won't be able to ever come back from the chipping yet.
I think even that is pretty worrying, those comments. So, and it fits into what we'd heard about Tiger in previous comebacks, that he was striping the ball on the range, feeding into what Jasper Parnevik was saying about him. That when he's in this nice little comfortable setting at home, he's hitting the same shots all the time. It's all perfectly fine.
Hank Haney said that when you shoot a 62, 63, 64 at your home club, that translates to a 67, 68 on any other course. For a pro.
Yes, yeah. And then you've got the added pressure of your Tiger Woods making your big comeback and all of that jazz. So maybe it was simply a case he didn't give himself enough time after the Ryder Cup, but he's pulled out of Turkey. Jason Day said he's not going to play again in 2016.
He said in the piece with Rose, I will definitely play at the Bahamas. The most cynical, seeing as Fionn's not here, I'm going to help us out here, but the most cynical view I've seen, interpretation of what's going on at Woods now, is that for endorsements and potentially for landing a couple of million, quite a few million for a club deal, he has to maintain the pretense that he's still an active golfer and he is coming back. So if Steinberg is sitting down now with Callaway, then
or I'd recommend.
Yeah, I mean, looks like he'd be mad to sit down with anyone else, clearly. If he was sitting down with a golf manufacturer, the amount of zeros after the number increase astronomically if you're coming back.
Yeah.
Whereas if he was to come out and Rose and say, do you know what, I think I'm probably done looking at how I'm playing, then that weakens his position on a whole host of areas, fronts. Now then again, does Tiger need that much money?
Well,
I know alimony's expensive and everything, but yeah, he's probably got enough.
He's still going to become the first billionaire golfer, isn't he? Even you look at Arnold Palmer, and he's just recently passed away. He was still right to the top five on an annual basis. It would worry me from his point of view that after all this practice, he's not feeling it with his irons. Yeah. What is happening with his putting and his chipping? Like, there was no mention of a short game there. I know you said putting was brought in eventually.
He said he can definitely putt.
But as we saw from Harrington at the weekend, so much of it is about scrambling. Mm. And if he can't feel it on his mid-irons, how far away is he from nailing it on his chips and his wedges and his half-clubs?
Yeah.
It's difficult to see him coming back anytime soon and actually been able to perform. And I think somewhere deep within him, he's scared, really frightened of what happened to him the last time he came back, when he threw in 78s and 81s and 82s, because that must have been the lowest point out of all this time trying to get back onto the golf course. He does not want to find himself in. What he needs is to come back and maybe miss the cut having shot 70, 71, 3 under par. This like average tournament, which is for a journeyman at the best of times, and he's gone out missing the cut after a set pair of 78s.
He did allude several times across the, it was at least an hour of the interview, to the young guys, their length. You know, he loves to compare himself to Michael Jordan and basketball players. And, you know, he would say, look, guys aren't doing slam dunks at 40, so I am really different now, and I'm not long anymore. You know, he openly said, I'm not long. And I heard Doug Ferguson from Associated Press tell a story the other day where it was a couple of years ago at Sherwood, that Tiger Woods tournament, where the 11th tee is shared with another tee, and Woods was on the par three and he was waiting for Dustin Johnson to hit. And Johnson steps up and just unleashes a Dustin Johnson drive, and Tiger shook his head and just said, oh my God. And they said, are you going to get back to doing that? And he said, never could do that and never will be able to do that. You know, so the two burning questions I had with Rowe's interview was, would the scandal come up, and how much would he talk about his father? So scandal came up, which was interesting. So here we go, Tiger Woods on the scandal and all that business.
Some would suggest, obviously, that humiliation you went through publicly, your private life exposed, has a lingering effect on your mind and your game.
I've heard that too.
I know.
I look at the fact that, I made a bunch of mistakes, but in the end, Elin is my ex-wife. She's one of my best friends. We've had two beautiful kids, and we have better communication than we've ever had. And I've talked to her about my life almost on a daily basis, and she does the same. So it was rough to go through, but in the end, here we are, better than we've ever been.
How do you tell your kids why Mama and Daddy are not left together?
It's because Daddy made some mistakes. Daddy made some mistakes, and I'd much rather have them hear it from me. And so
you've sat down and said, I regret what I did.
No, I don't. I haven't said that. I say that everybody makes mistakes, and the reason why Mommy's living in her house and Daddy's living in his house is because Daddy made mistakes, and it's okay. But you know what? You guys are so lucky to have two parents that love you so much. Not everyone has that. And I was lucky enough to have two lucky parents and two loving parents. My father did not. His parents died by the time he was 11 and 13. And so he grew up without having parents. My mom's parents died early. And so, that to me, I think it's important in the end, is that my kids know that no matter what happens, that they always have Dad. Dad will always be there. And Mom will always be there. As she said, we just don't live together physically. But emotionally and spiritually, we were always there with them.
And you feel like you've apologized to everybody that you need to apologize to?
Yes.
In terms of family and people that you care about?
Yes.
Did it make you more vulnerable?
I wouldn't say more vulnerable is the word.
What would you say?
I had to be honest with myself. And that's part of, going through what I went through, is I messed up. I shunned away a lot of things. I didn't communicate, with, for instance, Elin very well. And I learned from it. And then, flip side, fast forward, I'm a better communicator now. I talk to people more on a deeper level. And I learned a lot.
And if she's forgiven you, then that's a starting point for you.
She's forgiven me a long time ago.
But we've worked so hard on creating an environment for our kids. And as I said, she's one of my best friends. And to go, not too many people can say that about their exes, that they're their best friends.
No, I would think virtually nobody can. It's quite stunning that he refuses to say he regrets doing what he did. It's almost like a politician backed into a corner not wanting to use a certain phrase or admit they did something wrong in
as
a certain way.
As if there's some legal issue hanging over the whole thing. If you admit that you really regret this, suddenly...
Like, he'll openly say, I made mistakes. He will openly say, I apologise to my family. But he won't say he regrets it. At a later point in the interview, Charlie Rose says, what are your regrets in life? And Wood says, I only have one. And you think, it's this. And he says, I regret not playing for another year at Stanford. And Rose said, what? That's my only regret. Another year at Stanford, hanging out with Nota Begay and the boys. Great times, best time of my life. A lot of fun, very competitive, blah, blah, blah. Bullshit, bullshit, bullshit.
Well, at the best of times when you hear those kind of answers to those types of questions, the politician is only ever regretful of the fact that they were caught. But not of the fact that they actually did what they were accused of doing.
But
maybe he doesn't regret it.
He doesn't, because even that clip with his kids, he says, I explained to them, Daddy made some mistakes.
And that's okay.
And Rose says, and you regret them. He says, no, I've never said that. I made some mistakes and that's okay.
There's hardly some legal aspect to it, is there? Some legal element where it almost
has been advised that, hey, Tiger, you know what? Do you know who buys all our stuff? Men. And you know what men like? Guys who don't apologise. You know what? Well, this may have destroyed you with a certain amount of people. You know, a lot of people still go, fair play to Tiger. Did it his way.
What's the semantic difference between saying, I've apologised, I made mistakes, between openly and repeatedly saying those two things, and I regret it?
Like, if he is best friends with Elon, which I struggle to understand, but I don't see what goes on in their relationship on a daily basis. If he says to her, do you know what, Elon, I apologise for what I did. I'm really sorry for what I put you through, but I don't regret it.
And she's like, Tiger, that's okay, because we're best friends.
Yeah, there's something not right.
I forgive you, Tiger.
I heard somebody describe him as a golf journalist who watched that interview said, he's a bit weird now. And at times he is a bit weird.
Yeah. But how could he not be?
Sure.
I was thinking during that, there was two things that, firstly, he's a bit weird, and this was my overriding feeling, listen, that of pitying Tiger in so many aspects of his life right now, that it's all gone so horribly wrong. That there's a definite vulnerability to his voice when he's talking about that.
Yeah.
There's a massive vulnerability when he's talking about his game. The confidence seems to have just been zapped out of him completely.
The one, so Rose opened that part by saying to him, this destroyed your game. The one counter argument to that, and it's quite a strong counter argument, is in 2013 he wins 5 times, he's PGA Player of the Year, and but for hitting the flagstick at Augusta on a Friday on the 15th, he would have won the Masters. I'm just convinced.
I remember thinking at the time that this Masters is over.
Done.
If he makes a birdie on this par 5.
So that's 2013, that's 4 years on from 2009, the fire hydrant, all the breaking news. He's back. Like, he's over the shame.
So in that year, the best golf we have seen on the PGA Tour of the last 5 years has been from Tiger Woods. Mm-hmm. Like, nobody's won 5 times.
No.
He got back to World Number 1, didn't he?
Yeah, close to it anyway. I don't know, I can't remember it, but 5 times he must have been one of them.
It seems like a lifetime ago.
Yeah. But that is quite a strong counter-argument to you were so shamed by your own behaviour, which you don't regret that you couldn't come back. So
I wonder, if Phil Mickelson won his first major in 2004 at the Masters. That's 7 years after Tiger's first. And in between, Phil had, 8 or 9 second place finishes at major championships. And all these years on, Phil's marriage is intact. He is beloved with his children. He has all these fans. He has 8 fewer majors than Tiger. But I wonder, does Tiger, he probably doesn't, but do people look at the two of them and go, who would you rather be? Would you rather be Tiger with this, like, broken family, which clearly he says has been mended considerably, with your 14 majors, but all the pressure and vulnerability and your body breaking down? Or would you rather be Phil, despite his gambling/legal difficulties? He is riding high, playing Ryder Cups, contending in majors. It was part of that outrageous Sunday with Stenson just a few months ago, still winning on the PGA Tour. I'd rather be Phil.
Maybe this... Look, hands down, and maybe this is a stupid question, and everybody listening is going to be like, idiotic question.
It's a hypothetical and speculative question to get, but it's fun talking about it.
I think the Phil one is a no-brainer. I actually think, would you rather be you or Tiger Woods? Think how grim his life is.
Mm.
Like
every little insight we get is grim.
If people looked at me and I had done what he had done in 08-09...
Oh, we look at you with real pity.
No, I know that, but at least I don't mind myself. I'm okay with myself. I couldn't get over that bit. I don't know how he can live with himself. The public shame, the humiliation, his mother, the suit and the apology, the perception of him now.
Well, to go to get to such a high of you meet this beautiful Swedish woman, you get married, you have two kids, you're the greatest golfer of all time and you're winning majors for fun.
Yeah.
And then you screw it all up in the most horrendous fashion. Your body starts breaking down in and around the same time.
Yeah.
And suddenly you're at this low where you might have no regrets, but you don't really have any friends and all your mates, it seems, are...
Oh, no, he loves being a medalist with the guys.
That's what I mean.
Oh, yeah.
Are guys in their 60s who are retired from the bank and...
And Jasper.
And Jasper and Nolte.
When you talk about he doesn't regret those mistakes. I would say the mistakes he does regret are the ways in which he trained his body.
He's only one regret.
One regret. Stanford.
He has to regret the way in which he trained his body in those years.
Doesn't seem.
Had his body not broken down in around the time his marriage broke down, he could have distracted himself from all the issues by winning majors.
But what
was it he said before? Way back in those night gads, winning covers everything. Winning makes everything all right. Was that something along those lines?
It was really catchy.
If he'd won the first two majors of 2010, he'd come out and won at Augusta and then followed up at St Andrews a couple of months later. Everyone would have forgotten the fire hydrant.
But here I'm
asking,
his body
was broken.
Oh, nobody would have forgotten the fire hydrant.
We would have.
No way.
It takes care of everything.
So I'm asking you, the Phil thing is a no-brainer. Everyone picks Phil. Would you rather be like you or Tiger Woods? That's how grim I think his existence is. Would you rather have your life or Tiger Woods' life?
Clearly, I prefer my own.
I think I'd probably just go for Tiger over mine.
Like, because but I think I'd make it better.
What?
I think I'd make it better.
I'd like to have won 14 majors and...
No, I'd be miserable.
Oh, sorry.
You have to live his life.
So when I'm at home on a Thursday afternoon and everybody else is playing in a World Golf Championship, I'm just sitting there playing Call of Duty with some 14-year-old over in China.
Yeah.
You've had to have gone through the shame, but you also played out the good shit as well.
I think I'm just picking the good shit. You know, I think that would just sway me. He certainly has had higher highs than me and lower lows. I think I would just go for his life over mine. I mean, it's not actually the no-brainer question. It should be.
No.
Will I play you the other clip?
Go on.
Have you decided who you want to be?
You see, if you're Tiger Woods, like, in 100 years' time, people are going to be talking about Tiger Woods.
Sure.
Yeah, but he doesn't have a tweet in the Mayo News every week.
Yeah.
You're damn right he doesn't.
You know, I think just Tiger, but it's a tough life. Okay, so his father, his father comes up. He talked, I can only play like 3 minutes of this because I don't want to play the whole interview. He talked amazingly about his father, actually, and their relationship, and it was just class. It was really good stuff. It's worth checking out on YouTube. You can get the full interview. So this is just some stuff about his father I didn't know, because in the that ESPN piece, who wrote that piece?
Wrote the Luis Suarez piece.
Yeah. Like, we should know
Wright
this
Thompson.
Guy. Yeah. Wright Thompson effectively makes out that, like, Tiger flew to bury his father and they flew back and he didn't really grieve. He just, I don't know, avoided his family, didn't talk about it. Tiger kind of alludes to that. So Wright Thompson was right about that. So here's Tiger talking about his father's death.
It hurt a lot. I mean, I grieved. I didn't grieve right away. I put it away for a while. And I missed the cut at the U.S. Open. Yeah. I played horribly at Wingfoot. And then I still hadn't really grieved yet. But then I came back at Hoylake and I played really well. And for some reason, it was the most interesting thing going out there and playing the final round. I had this overwhelming sense of calm. Like, okay, what is this feeling? You know, normally you're pretty jacked up to play the final round of a major and you get a chance to win. And I did. And I had the lead. But all of a sudden, I felt this overwhelming calmness, and it was like my pop was there. And then I finished the 18, and I never cry. But this started coming out, and I couldn't control it. I just missed my dad. And I knew right then that he would never witness this again. And that was really hard to take.
He treated you like an adult.
He did. One of the things that I do with my kids that he did with me is... Anytime we talked, he'd always make sure that he was always at eye level. And so when he was up above me, he'd always sit down.
And then if he was laying down when he was towards the end of his life and he wasn't feeling very good, he'd sit up. And so we'd be at eye level now. He'd come up, and we'd always work at eye level. And that is something that I think is so important. He never talked down to anybody. He never talked down to his child. We were communicating.
There were times in which you were estranged from him. Yes?
Oh, I don't know about estranged. What do you mean?
Well, meaning that you two were not getting along because you had some questions. And your mother knew he was sick.
Mm-hmm.
This is what is said. I'm asking you, is it mm-hmm. true? Because it's a perfectly natural thing for everybody to do.
Mm-hmm.
And your mother said, you got to go make up with your father. You don't know how long he's going to live.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't, you'll regret it mm-hmm. the rest of your life.
I wouldn't say that we were that far apart. Not like that. We were still in communication. We're still talking. But I needed to get my relationship back to where it used to be.
But what was wrong with it?
You know, I think that
what was wrong with it?
When Dad was sick, he really said some pretty outlandish things. And I think it was just him being sick. But I took it personal. So I said, hey, you know what? You've been really sick, and the meds you've been on, he's been all over the shop. His diabetes was really bad. And I didn't understand it at the time because I was still playing golf and still focused on the things I needed to do. And when a couple times when he was really sick, he would say, you know, hey, Kentucky's, how was Kentucky last week? I said, Dad, I was here with you yesterday. You know, but that's, he said some pretty outlandish things at the time, and chalk it up to being sick. But he gave me one last hurrah about 2 weeks before he died. He gave me one last hurrah, and it was a talk that we talked for about an hour and a half. But it was my dad of old. He gave me one last bit of himself, and then from then on, he quickly eroded and then finally passed away.
There you go. It's the last clip we'll bring
stuff.
He didn't talk about what the one last hurrah was?
Oh, a chat. An hour and a half of talking like the old days, Tiger and his dad. Happy. The full reasons for the estrangement, the outlandish things he was saying, I don't fully know. I've read everything I can possibly read about Tiger Woods. They've kept some of that stuff. That just has stayed private. The right Thompson piece doesn't know.
It's an incredibly complicated relationship. And like,
there's things that have gone on that we can't say on air that we've heard.
Yeah.
It's just so complicated, that relationship, yeah.
Well, the phrase used by Rose, he treated you like an adult, that was directly referenced in the ESPN article in terms of the environment that Earl would have put Tiger into many times when he was a child with his ex-army buddies. There would often be spells where Tiger would go many days without speaking to another child, without speaking to somebody else of his age.
Mm.
And I think that is what Rose was talking about when he said that.
There's certainly a lot in it. Like the estrangement, Tiger there gives the impression the estrangement is, oh, well, he was on his meds and he was saying stupid, outlandish things like a, you know, crazy old person.
Yeah.
That's not the full story. Like, that's not the reason you stopped talking to your dad. You're smart enough, despite what you've said there, you're smart enough to know he might be saying these things because of the meds. So, I know, it's just very interesting. Like, you're sitting here gripping the chair, not breathing, going, ask him more. And it's difficult for Rose to do that.
It is so gripping because of how influential his father was on him.
Yeah.
And how influential he was on everything that's gone badly wrong for him.
Mm-hmm.
And his lack of remorse, the lack of regret that we've heard from.
One regret, Nathan.
One regret. You don't understand.
I've got
Little Big A is so much fun.
I've got one regret from today. Alone, my life.
What is that, Joe?
Today.
What's today's regret?
I should have got up earlier.
We're recording this just before 4.
Should have got up earlier.
What time did you get up?
Oof, 11. I was feeling rough again.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
I don't even think I could sleep till 11 now.
I was napping. Snoozing.
We woke up at 7:20 and thought,
so
what's
I
going on here?
Yeah.
This is unbelievable. No. What a lion!
I haven't been well, so I felt like a lion, you know.
There is no need to go into any detail.
No. It was explosive.
Oh!
Any final Tiger thoughts. Again, you should watch the full interview if you're interested.
Go watch the full interview.
Everybody is, I'm sure, and it's really good.
I can't wait for him to play again, and I'm going to watch all 2 days of that tournament.
I know. I'm going to record it and watch every second of it, and then watch Brandel Chamblee.
I think he even missed your analyze every
show. He did. Yeah. He did.
Well, I didn't get it.
Dave made a joke.
At my expense?
No. At Tiger's expense.
I'm going to watch all 2 days of that tournament.
There's no cut, Dave. Joke's on you.
No cut in watching.
The Bahamas Hero Challenge thing.
That's if he plays, Joe.
Jason Day said he wasn't going to play again this year.
Oh, he has to play. This is his home event. It's his tournament.
Yeah.
He promised. He said he was going to play.
promised, Tiger. This is all that's going to keep us going in December.
You know, the sad thing is there's going to be tweets in saying, why did you talk about the world number 687 for so much of the show? Well, you know, the world number one in the world isn't even on Charlie Rose, and everybody's not fascinated by story. We're going
to
do another 5 minutes, okay, if that's okay. There is still it's still a mystery, though. He still doesn't explain what's happened to this game. Injuries is about as far as he'll go. It's still all a mystery. The chipping, the putting, everything.
Was he the most confident player ever to play golf? Like, at his best, had he the strut of
probably
I'm invincible?
He must have felt
like that
invincible.
Is gone.
He must have felt invincible. Jesper Parnevik had a great line. A lot of people went back to Jesper and said, hey, what the hell, dude? You know, you said. And Jesper just ended up talking about Tiger. And he said a great thing about Pebble Beach 2000, which I never heard anyone say before. And he said, people don't understand. I played that Pebble Beach and the greens aren't good there at the best of times. And that week, they weren't good. There were all these tiny, like, bobbles. And the ball, if you were hitting a 7-foot putt at the hole, the ball would break about 18 times. Just like, it was almost dancing on its way into the hole. So it was a nightmare. And he said Tiger, in just the most miraculous way, unconsciously, subconsciously, seemed to be able to read all of those breaks, and it would just break 8 times and go in the hole. And he said he's never seen anything like it. I've never seen anyone do it like that. And he also mentioned then 08, his last major win, the putt Tiger had to take it to a playoff. Parnevik had the same putt on the day, and it was outside right and coming in, and so he played it outside right and it never broke. It just went dead straight, and he thought, bloody hell, we all read it that way, or, you know. And then he's watching Tiger with the same putt, exact same putt, and he's thinking, oh, he's going to screw it. He's going to misread it like everyone else, going to screw it up. And he said Tiger played it with even more break, like hit it a foot outside the hole, and Parnevik was watching saying, this isn't coming back at all. And he said it came back. And Parnevik says, I know this sounds crazy. I think Tiger did it with his mind. It's the only explanation. And it was Pro V1 Kenobi stuff.
Did you make up that story?
No. Parnevik said it. So
he told it well, whether it's true or not.
I think he moved it with his mind.
It makes it sound mythical.
Yeah. You know?
Anyway, okay. To far
Let's
more
step back.
Far more mundane matters, yeah. The reason I'm keeping you 5 more minutes is just to mention the WGC is on.
I watched it this morning.
Did you?
Yes.
Okay, over to you.
Treated my 3-year-old to a morning of golf, which he wasn't best pleased about. Oh. There was a lot of anger in the room for the 2 hours I got to watch the golf.
2 hours?
This morning.
If you're a kid, that's like 5 days.
Yeah. 2 hours of the opening round of a non-major, non-GC, WGC,
non-Ryder
Cup.
I managed to get him to
school. Well, it's not really.
It's a WGC.
I did manage to get him to school during that and get back to watch another. It's a WGC. It's a waste of time for tournaments.
If you were listing, the WGC wins of big top tournament players, this would be the one you'd forget about.
The Chinese patrons have started saying, get in the hole.
In Chinese?
Are you going to do...
No, I'm not. But they have started doing it, influenced by Americans.
Yeah. They could have been saying that. It seemed like it was just deathly silence.
Oh, really?
For the entire day.
It's a pity.
Rory, from the bits I saw, was striking the ball incredibly well from tee to green. But just couldn't hold himself
up. Oh, for God's sake.
The commentary was bizarre this morning because the scoring was very good. And Radar, for the entire way through, was like, anything better than par here is a brilliant, brilliant score. And I'm like... pretty much the entire field seems to be under par. The leader's on about 9 under or 8 under.
Carlberg is the leader on 8 under. Rory's 7 shots off the base. 2 birdies, 1 bogey. So putting let him down.
Putting let him down.
Because I saw him strike 1 shot for an eagle putt, which was just outrageous.
Oh, on the par 4?
Yeah.
Yeah, where he landed on the green. And
it went over water, trees. Yeah. Like, you're not meant to go that way.
Yeah.
And it didn't even look like he was hitting driver.
I think he did hit driver.
Okay.
His brand new driver.
The TaylorMade M2 driver is what he's using these days, folks.
Don't know why he didn't go to Callaway.
Yeah, listen. Madness. He'll get there eventually. Brooks Koepka dropped his Nike driver for the TaylorMade M2 driver as well at the Ryder Cup.
Right.
So Rory's followed suit. Driver and Woods. Everything else is still Nike. So we'll see how he goes over the next few days. That's a pity, the putter. He new putter this week as well.
Oh, yeah?
Still Scotty Cameron, I believe. But
another Scotty Cameron.
Different type.
Again.
Yeah.
Right.
Again, which is worrying.
Shane Lowry was, what, 3 over?
Right. Ricky Fowler went well. He won off the lead. And Russell Knox went well again, 6 under, so he's 2 off the lead. And Matsuyama had 10 birdies.
Yeah.
And 4 bogeys.
Fowler finished by the time I started watching it. But it was just a bit grim.
Really?
Like, it was...
No one there.
Nobody there. When the commentators weren't talking, it was just silence.
All you can hear is traffic and birds.
Yeah.
Singing.
Right.
I was like, come on.
JP Fitzgerald texted Rory this week to say, a tsunami just hit my bank account, so thank you very much. JP, $1 million. $1.5 million. Imagine going to check your bank balance and seeing $1 million. Yeah. Wow. I mean...
You see, that's why you got to consider if you'd swap your life for Tiger's life.
I mean, money is a great thing.
Yeah, but it shows you that McIlroy had no idea the $10 million had landed.
Sure. When was the last time you think he checked his bank balance?
I know. He's not going to the ATM going, geez, I wonder if I have enough to pay for dinner tonight.
Yeah.
But JP obviously checks it. He was probably checking it every day, knowing that this $10 million was landing any day now.
Ringing Rory up constantly going, could you get your people to just check if it's coming along? It's like Christmas around the corner.
It's quite phenomenal.
We're going to China for the week. We're going to need a few quid.
$1 million.
So JP has made this year more than the vast majority of golfers on the European Tour.
People in the world, really, I think.
Yeah.
He made 3 times in that tournament than Harrington did for winning the Portuguese Open.
Yeah. Yeah, well, Rory said he deserved it. He's a big part of what we do. First time he's ever said we. He was with me when I was world number 210 in the world and when I was number 1.
Well, in other words, the first week you turned professional and you were world number 210
and
in the world.
You were a prodigy, you know. Everybody knew you were going to be world number 1 eventually. So there's JP.
People have backed off JP a little bit over the last while.
Yeah,
I think he got a raw deal for...
I think so too.
Because everyone had gone through every little aspect of McIlroy's career and picked it apart. So eventually it came to him and it was
your turn. And so this season, the putting has been so overwhelmingly clearly the problem. You can't have a go at JP.
Nothing I can do about that.
I wondered, would he try and get someone who's going to read the putts for him? Bones style.
Yeah.
But now look, they're comfortable together. Rory said as well, the Olympics, he's not so sure about Tokyo now.
There's a political situation there.
It's more complicated for me than other people, he said, so... It's no banker Rory's going to be at Tokyo in 2020. We've kind of gone over time here. I think that's about all we needed to mention, really. Are we done?
It's been fun.
So we will be back next week. Brandel Chambly, I'm in text conversation with Brandel Chambly, which is just exciting stuff. I've got his number.
Not to get him on the pod, he's also telling Brandel Chambly how well he's playing at the moment. Brandel, do you want to see my scorecard?
Yeah.
Can you give this a shout out?
In every pod, someone comes up and we go, oh, we should get him on the pod. We are now very close to having Brandel Chambly on the pod 1 week and Michael Collins, ESPN caddy, on the pod another week. So they're going to be on the way in the next month, tops. So we'll talk to you next week. Good luck.
Tell all my exes wear Rolexes, but I reside right here in Dardanelle. Starter kit right here.